pointedly kept from looking at Gordette. Staring at the mass of vehicles parked out on the open mare, Doug muttered, "What we need is a good solar flare to knock them out."
"That would only postpone the inevitable," Anson said.
Doug looked at her, sitting behind her desk. "Ginny, you used to be a lot of fun to talk to. You're getting morose."
"Yeah, I've noticed that too," she answered, straight-faced. "Wonder why?"
"How old is this information?" Doug asked, pointing at the wall screen.
"This is real time," she said.
"The birds made 4 passes over the region so far. And they haven't tried to blind it or knock it off the air?"
"Why bother?" Gordette said. "If I was running their operation, I'd want you to see how much stuff we got."
"It's kind of depressing," Anson agreed,
again without looking Gordette's way.
"Who else has seen this?" Doug asked.
"Nobody," she replied sharply. "The bits are transmitted from the satellite to our computer and straight to my office. That's why I asked you to come here and see it. Not even Harry Clemens is getting this data."
"Good," Doug said. "It certainly is depressing."
300 troopers," Anson mused, "with missiles and all the other goodies."
"Well," Doug said, trying to brighten the mood, "at least we know they're still at Copernicus. They're not on their way here yet."
"Take them about 2 days to cover the distance?" Gordette asked.
"Just about," Doug replied.
2 Earth days," Anson said. 48 hours. Maybe a little less if they push it."
Steepling his fingers almost as if in prayer, Gordette said,
"Well, if they're gonna knock out your satellite, it'll be just before they haul ass and start on their way here."
"Why bother?"
"Standard operating procedure. No commander wants the enemy watching his route of march if he can help it."
Anson looked from Gordette to the wall screen and back again.
"So if our bird goes off the air, that means they're starting on their way here," Doug finished for her.
As if on cue, the wall screen display broke into wild, jagged streaks and then went blank. The three of them rushed down to the control center once they were certain that the reconnaissance satellite had actually been knocked out and the dead wall screen wasn't merely a malfunction somewhere in the communication system.
"You want to launch another recce bird?"
Anson asked as they dashed along the corridor, hurrying past startled people.
"Not much sense to that," Doug said over his shoulder.
"Yeah," Gordette agreed. "Just be target practice for him." The control center was calm, with its usual air of controlled intensity, the quiet hum of consoles, the flickering of display screens in the dimly lit chamber. Doug automatically glanced at the big wall screen that displayed a schematic of the entire base. The usual scattering of red and yellow lights, but otherwise everything was operating normally. Doug knew from hours of studying the ballistics that a nuclear-tipped missile could be launched from the L1 station and reach moon base in less than an hour. Even faster if the peacekeepers wanted to goose it, but Doug thought that they would want to take at least an hour so that they would have time to make pinpoint mid-course corrections. If his reasoning was correct, they would want the nuke to go off over the solar farms inside Alphonse's ring wall after the peacekeeper assault force had arrived on the other side of the mountains, shielded from the nuke's radiation pulse, and ready to cross Vodyahovich Pass as soon as the explosion had knocked out Moonbase's main electrical power supply. The radar view of L1 showed the same cluster of spacecraft hovering around the space station that Doug had seen the last time he looked.
"Can we get a visual?" he asked Jenny.
"Turn one of the astronomical scopes on it?"
She nodded and walked off toward the technician who was monitoring the automated astronomical equipment sitting out by the central peak in the middle of Alphonsus. Edith came tearing into the control center, breathless.
"Doug,"
she said, puffing as she skidded to a stop next to him.
"McGrath wants me to pipe the battle Earthside in real time."
"Who's McGrath?"
"The top boss. He owns Global News."
Doug shifted mental gears as fast as he could.
Still, it took a few moments for him to realize what Edith was telling him.
"You'll show what's happening here when the peacekeepers attack?"
"To the whole blazin' world," Edith said, exultant.
For the first time in what seemed like years, Doug felt a genuine smile curving his lips. Faure's not going to like that. Not at all. Through her sitting room window, Joanna could see a soft twilight descending on the garden and the woods beyond it.
The trees had been planted there to cover up the view of Savannah's skyline and give the occupants of her house the feeling that they were truly out in the countryside rather than half a mile from the interstate.
"Global's going to broadcast the confrontation?"
she asked Doug's image, grinning at her from the window wall screen above the fireplace. She could not bear to use the word battle or attack. She knew that Moonbase could not win a battle or survive an attack.
"Aidan McGrath himself called Edith and asked her to do it," Doug said after the 3-second lag.
"Real-time coverage, blow by blow."
"I've already got a pocket full of senators demanding an investigation of the president's handling of the Moonbase crisis,"
Joanna mused.
"Coverage of the confrontation will show the voting public how you're being attacked by the UN's peacekeepers."
"This has got to stay confidential," Doug was saying, not waiting for her response.
"We don't want Foray to know about it beforehand."
Joanna's brows knit.
"But Doug, maybe if we leaked the information, Foray would call off the attack."
She watched her son's image in the display screen. Once he heard her words, he shook his head.
"The peacekeepers are already on their way here, Mom. No one's going to call off the attack, not now."
Alarm tingled through Joanna like an electric current.
"You're certain?"
"In 48 hours or less, we'll be able to see them coming across Mare Nubium."
Joanna suddenly felt as if someone had ripped out her insides.
All these weeks, she had known it would come to this, yet she realized now that she had desperately clung to an unconscious hope that it could all be averted.
"You'll have to surrender to them, then," she said dully.
3 seconds passed. Doug replied,
"Maybe."
"You can't fight them. You don't have any weapons."
Again the agonizing wait.
Doug said, "We don't have any guns, that's true enough. But we're not beaten yet."
"Doug, what are you thinking of? You can't fight an armed battalion of trained peacekeeper troops. You'll get yourself killed. You'll destroy Moonbase."
He hadn't waited for her response. He was saying, in a calm, carefully measured tone,
"I can't tell you what we're planning, Mom, because even a tight laser link spreads enough for some snooper to eavesdrop. But we're not going to obediently open our hatches and let the peacekeepers take over Moonbase."
"Doug, they'll kill you."
He smiled at her words.
"If we surrender and have to return Earthside, I'm a dead man anyway."
Joanna started to reply, then realized that her son was right. He had nothing to lose by fighting for Moonbase.
"Nah, I don't mind working the night shift," Killifer was saying. "At least I'll be indoors under the roof if it rains."
The security chief looked slightly uneasy.
"I don't usually put newcomers inside the house," he said. "But Jonesy's come down with some virus, and we need a replacement for him right away."
"It's okay," Killifer repeated, trying hard not to sound eager. "I'll take his shift."
"You already did your regular shift. I don't like asking you to double up."
Killifer shrugged as carelessly as he could.
4 to midnight is easy. I wouldn't go to sleep until after midnight anyway."
The chief swiveled back and forth slowly in his desk chair, making it squeak slightly, eyeing Killifer as if he weren't certain he was doing the right thing. Killifer sat in front of the little desk, doing his best to appear nonchalant. Then he got an inspiration.
"I get overtime pay for this, don't I?"
The chief visibly relaxed.
"Yeah, sure. 1.5 times.
Killifer nodded, as if the money was his reason for agreeing to the extra shift so readily.
"Double shift isn't so bad," he said. "It's only for a few days, right?"
"Yeah," said the chief,
"until Jonesy comes back."
"I'd just be spending my pay in some bar or someplace," Killifer said. "This way I make plastic instead of spending it."
"All right," the chief said, still uneasy. "Go downstairs and change into a regular uniform. You work with Rodriguez. He monitors the screens in here, and you sit in the kitchen until she and her husband go to bed. Then you patrol the rooms once every 30 minutes. Check all the windows and doors, except the master bedroom. Just make sure their doors shut tight. Pay particular attention to the sliders that go out to the pool deck."
"Right," Killifer nodded.
"Remember, she doesn't like to see us. Stay in the kitchen until they go up to the master bedroom."
"What about the butler?"
"He'll go to bed after they do," said the chief.
"Okay, good." Again the chief hesitated. Killifer could feel his pulse throbbing in his ears as he sat facing the man.